Okay, we're back on tape. And I think we were talking about tennis on the weekends.
Well, yeah. So for me, I spend a lot of time on sports. So on weekends, I usually should play like 2 hours each day. And sometimes I watch some television. Mm-hmm. Not a lot. So generally, we try not to watch television at home. Mm-hmm. And we still don't have a very fancy television set.
Okay. What about the internet?
The internet, we do quite a lot. Mm-hmm. The kids, my wife, they all do it. Uh-huh. And my wife usually is working on the stock market, you know, analyzing the companies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, I usually don't work on the internet because I think it's pretty slow at home.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Whereas here it's much faster. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I read a little bit of news magazines on the internet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for the kids, they're just playing games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So generally not too much. And I sometimes take my kids to golf practice or mm-hmm. tennis. Mm-hmm. And my older son was taking piano lessons mm-hmm. once a week.
Mm-hmm. Do you work on their schoolwork with them?
Not myself, mostly my wife. Mm-hmm. Like they have a Wednesday folder the parents are supposed to look mm-hmm. and check. That my wife does.
And how old are your children?
10 and 9. They're about 1.5 years apart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's hard when they're really little, but now it's not so hard.
Right. Yeah. They can play with each other.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, in terms of going back just a little bit to your lab, you know, most people learn how to run their lab from having been in someone else's lab, and you had two very different experiences.
Right.
So, do you have birthday parties in your lab?
No.
How does your lab work?
I think things changed, you know, from beginning to now. Right now, I think the lab was, I tried to run it. I hope the postdocs are self-motivated mm-hmm. and work hard, of course. Mm-hmm. And I give some ideas, some little guidance, but hopefully the postdoc will just be able to carry on something by themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wish they had worked on something that is their idea. Mm-hmm. At least they should feel that mm-hmm. that was their idea. I didn't used to have to do it this way. I always just give the postdoc what I think is important and just let them do it. Mm-hmm. And now I realize that's not the best approach. People are much more motivated when they're working on something they take credit for. Mm-hmm. So I learned that and I try to do it this way now. So that's mostly I release myself a lot of work too. I can spend more time on my own work instead of talking to them all the time. Mm-hmm. So we just met once a week to discuss what they have done and what their plan is. And so not much, too much daily stuff unless they want to show me something. So for technicians, that's different.
What kind of a boss are you?
What kind of boss? I think I'm pretty fair and business, so I don't get too much involved with personal relationships. And so just be professional, I think, and just try to be like that.
Because some people have said, of course, if you don't get involved in it, it's not a problem, but some people have said that one of the hardest things about becoming a PI was having to sort of learn how to manage people, because you're not trained for that in your own training, and then suddenly you have all these people.
Right. How to manage people, right? Yeah, I think that's a learning process, you know. Probably better than I was before. And, you know, I used to be easily getting impatient and talking in a nasty way, you know, not nice, and make the post office feel unhappy, you know. I try to, I guess they felt pressure from my mood. I think that was probably not a good idea. So I have learned to help them more. When they have problems, don't try to blind them. Try to be helpful in terms of solving it. Just be more calm. Of course, I also learned that you need to manage different people differently. Yeah. Some people may handle your temper a little more, then you can be more liberal with that. Some people are more sensitive, then you have to be careful.
Yeah, well, life is a learning process.
Right, I think it's a learning process, and you learn from your mistakes. I think that's the best way to learn, actually. If somebody had told you how to do it, you're probably still going to make some mistakes anyway.
Well, the irony of, you know, being a scientist is that you don't get trained for any of the things that you have to do after you become a scientist. I mean, most people don't write a grant until they become a PI. Depending on where you did your work, there are some labs where the PI does all the writing, which means you didn't write until you become the PI.
Right.
You don't have to manage people or teach or do any of these other things.
That's right. So different labs really can train very different people. And some postdocs, some students are better qualified for being a scientist than some others, even though they probably have the same number of cell paper. But that could be very different.
Sure.
And in some labs, the postdoc was treated like a technician and then was doing all the work following the boss's idea. Then this, I don't imagine this postdoc would become a successful scientist, as an independent scientist, whereas a postdoc from another lab that was totally dependent from writing papers to designing experiments, you know, he was already training this way. Then he was already experiencing being a professor already, even when he was a student or a postdoc.
Well, some of it he didn't experience. You know, grant writing.
Well, he might, because he might write a fellowship.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is pretty much similar to a grant.
Sure. So how prepared did you feel when you, you know,
I was very prepared in terms of pursuing my independent project, mm-hmm. in terms of having independent thinking, in terms of feeling confident that you can do a lot mm-hmm. of these things mm-hmm. that you know, first-class scientists are doing, mm-hmm. based on the experience I had. So I started my real lab work by working on something that was my idea. So mm-hmm. I never experienced, mm-hmm. you know, working for somebody and just do what they told me to do. You know, never had a technician type of experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The only thing was, you wanted to finish my degree, I did something that was just for the paper. Mm-hmm. And then for the postdoc work, I was very proud of the fact that my work there was cutting edge, mm-hmm. and the ideas was mine, mm-hmm. and so I felt like I can compete with anybody, mm-hmm. even the best lab in the world. A lot of people may also have the same thinking. That is, you don't have to be afraid of a competition when you mm-hmm. start out your new lab. Because mm-hmm. you're basically competing with a postdoc mm-hmm. in that big professor's lab. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you can compete with any of those postdocs. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling pretty okay to start a position. And in terms of writing grants, I think I was also prepared very well, since I wrote my papers. All the papers for my postdoc, I wrote them. Mm-hmm. The first author ones. And even for my PhD work, mm-hmm. the paper, I wrote them, and Jiang basically did a lot of work for the introduction. Mm-hmm. He changed substantially the introduction for that paper and the way the result was written. But he mm-hmm. left the discussion mm-hmm. totally to me. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much wrote the discussion. So I was trained quite heavily in that regard. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I feel I was better prepared than most people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see how postdocs were used as technicians in some labs. Or the students or user technicians.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can have some students with a very impressive publication record and still doesn't have a clue about how things were done.
Yeah. It's actually kind of a disservice to a postdoc to use them as a technician.
It is, but sometimes you get lousy postdocs that they don't have ideas, and you are left with either this guy's going to sit there doing nothing, or you tell them to do something.
Yeah.
You make the best out of this situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
Suddenly, if the guy has very good idea and is very driven and very enthusiastic about projects, then you definitely should try to avoid telling him what to do.
Yeah. Okay. There's one other thing I'd like to touch on today, and then I think we'll wrap it up until tomorrow. We talked a little bit about earlier about the gender thing, what happens to women in science. But I wonder if you've ever encountered any ethnic or racial discriminations or problems in the sciences?
Well, as a Chinese background, and it's not really a minority mm-hmm. in the science. You don't consider, you certainly don't benefit like blacks in terms of getting academic positions, right? Same thing as the Chinese background students, Chinese American students. They have a tough time to get into the universities. Mm-hmm. They were reverse So, otherwise, I think mostly a natural. I don't feel that there's a special force that, you know, these people have a secret mutual agreement to you know, discriminate against some group. And if there is some discrimination, it's just being the unavoidable type of things, being human, being natural. So, so that's part of the reason that I want to do something that either going to be good or I can, maybe I get nothing. I don't want to be mediocre, you know. I feel that being not that the Caucasians to achieve something here, one has to be especially good.
One if you're not Caucasian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you are a Caucasian, you can maybe okay with being a mediocre in what you're doing, and still by playing some politics, you can get along well with your career or whatever you're doing. So for me at least, I think science, doing the best science, is the only way I can realize my ambition, you know. So, and I know that once you know, in science basically, it doesn't really matter what your background is. Your work should speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. But sometimes your good work also needs people to help, you know, to help say, okay, this work is good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can do good work and people ignore you.
Yeah. That's true.
So I don't know if that's going to be the case, whether your ethnicity may influence how your work is being perceived. I don't think that's going to be too important. Mm-hmm. I think your work is still the number one thing that they view. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether you're black or whatever, who did the work. Mm-hmm. If this work is important, it's going to be realized, mm-hmm, sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the, at a place like this, what's the, you know, when you look at the scientists here, you said there were a lot of women here. Mm-hmm. I know, what percent would you say, I mean, I'm not asking for a scientific
really
statement, but just approximately.
Maybe 40%
are women.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what about by ethnicity? There's lots of Chinese scientists in the United States.
Right.
I know that, but
here we have mostly foreigners.
Oh, really?
Europeans, mm-hmm, from Finland, from Sweden, mm-hmm, from Germany, from Russia more recently, mm-hmm, and from Spain, mm-hmm, and China. We have three faculties here, mm-hmm, from several from Japan.
Mm-hmm. Are there any black or Hispanic?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No, there's one from Italy. Mm-hmm. So we're a good mix. Mm-hmm. There are some Americans too. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like they're the minority.
Yeah, in terms of number, yeah. You know, foreign and American. Uh-huh. American should be the minority, I think.
Okay. Well, why don't we wrap it up for today? And sure. We'll pick up tomorrow and deal with just a couple other topics that we have left.
Good. Okay. Almost there, huh?
Almost there.